Living his entire life with no idea he had autism, it was his son's diagnosis that led to his own and a whole new perspective on life. Carter's been on a challenging journey with his mental health dating back to his childhood, and it's a big part of why he cares so much about helping others now. A husband and father to three young children with his own podcast centered on parenting and mental health, Carter's life is full of joy and meaning that never existed before.
I just started really, really trying to, instead of just allowing myself to exist in this haze with when it came to my mental health, because that's what it was. A lot of the time when I was feeling low or feeling like my mental health was a bit negative at the time, I'd kind of just hit autopilot until I could come out of it and be a little bit more happy. I'd just kind of exist on this monotonous plane. And that's why I existed in, you know, horrible jobs for so many years that I absolutely hated, because I was just autopiloting through life. I was like waiting for the next nice thing to happen to me.
He does it all while navigating disability and is proud to be the dedicated dad he's become. This is Carter's story. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson. I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a thing. Help us reach more people by taking 10 seconds to give the show a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you've got some feedback on this conversation, I'd love to hear it. You can vote in the poll and leave a comment on every Spotify episode. I read them all. This show touches on some tough topics that may provoke strong emotions. If you find anything in this chat distressing, please do whatever you need to do to look after yourself. Carter, you lived your whole life up until you were 35 without knowing that you were autistic. What was it like to process that all of a sudden?
Life-changing. Absolutely life-changing. I went my entire childhood, my teen years and my early adulthood always feeling like I didn't quite fit in, and all of these things that I now know to be ADHD and autism were just this kind of big mashup in my mind that would come out as just raw emotion, and I'd just break down constantly. And, you know, I'd have psychiatrists, psychologists, et cetera, just say, you know, you're just a very sensitive person, or like diagnosed with depression or anxiety or stress disorders and things like that. And then getting the ADHD diagnosis, it was just like everything kind of clicked. It was like my entire life was this 3,000 piece puzzle, and I was missing, you know, 100, 200 pieces, and I could never see this full beautiful picture of how my life actually is. And once that diagnosis happened, it was like I found those pieces under the couch, and I was able to put it all together and see that entire beautiful picture and understand myself a lot better. It was a journey, and it was a rough journey, especially with things like unmasking with autism, where I kind of would look at myself in the mirror and be like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I like. My personality traits my own, or are they things that I have adopted to just get by in society and appear as normal as possible?
Was it suggested at all in the past, or did you have an inkling, or was that the first time that you'd heard that?
First time, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
My entire past, there was always a whole lot of things going on around me for people to be like, well, it's understandable that he's not quite coping too well with life. You know, I'm a child of divorce. My parents divorced at a young age for me. I was about 5 when they divorced. And then there was years of like this really intense like custody battle, and there was some nasty things happening. I was horribly bullied all throughout primary school and high school. My mum was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 12, shortly after we moved to an entirely new town where she had remarried. So
There
was always just more important things going on around me for me to just easily fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and scapegoats for why you're feeling that way, things that were seemingly obvious that could be linked to the symptoms that you were showing, but actually there was something massive underneath it all that you didn't learn until just recently. And that diagnosis came about because your young son was diagnosed with autism before you were. How did you come to his diagnosis, or what led up to that?
So my son was diagnosed first with a global developmental delay, and then shortly after it was the autism diagnosis. So we initially found a lot of markers for autism with him. You know, his speech wasn't coming along as well as it should be. Was, you know, what we now know to be stimming or sensory seeking, flapping hands and toe stepping and a lot of those types of things, you know, avoiding eye contact. So yeah, we just got him into a pediatrician and told them our thoughts. From there, we got the global developmental delay diagnosis. And then shortly thereafter, we did the autism screening. And yeah, and
was it
a few weeks later, I think he was kind of in the corner stimming, playing with his fingers and doing stuff. And my wife looked over at me and I was doing the exact same thing, which I hadn't realized. And she kind of clicked and she was like, "Hey, maybe we should get you checked out."
Yeah, wow. And you, is your wife on the spectrum as well?
She is too, yeah. So we're one big happy family of neurospicy.
Yeah. And you've got a couple of daughters too. So three kids, yourself and your wife, and one of your other daughters has autism too. Is that right?
We haven't had her diagnosed. We don't believe she has autism. We believe that she likely has ADHD.
Okay. All right. So there's quite a bit going on in the family then, but I suppose one benefit is you're all going to understand each other really on a deep level and be able to be there for each other and be able to teach your at least one child and potentially multiple of ways of thinking about this and putting it in perspective and managing it, which could be, I'm sure will be a really helpful thing for them. So you got this diagnosis not all that long ago, and then all of a sudden you have this label to attach to yourself, which is ADHD and autism. It sounds like you found that label and that explanation to be helpful compared to all the other random ones that were sort of thrown around the rest of your life. Can you tell us about why it's been useful for you to be diagnosed with autism and ADHD?
It's a strange one because I found myself, as I said, not knowing who I was. So it really was just this kind of journey that started from nothing, where I was like, okay, well, I've got this label to put on myself, but my entire bucket's been emptied. So it's like I need to start fresh. I need to figure out who I am, what I like, and not only that, but how I can perhaps mold myself in a way that can be helpful for other people. You know, my entire life, I've always felt this really strong connection with helping people. It's why I'm in the work that I do today. I work in youth justice with young people who are in need of a little bit of help. And then on top of that, I was like, well, I'm a parent that's finding out I'm autistic, and I'm seeing on TikTok more and more that there are parents that are finding out they're autistic in their 30s, and they've all got stories that aren't dissimilar to me. They come from, you know, child trauma backgrounds and things like that, and they seem to have also slipped through the cracks. So I knew from the get-go that how I wanted to be was just helpful and try to make my existence beneficial for society in some way, shape, or form, which is how my podcast, the Touched Out podcast, was birthed.
How have you felt about yourself and perceived yourself up until the past year?
I was never kind to myself, never. I always would blame myself for the things that happened around me, because a lot of the time I was told that the things that are happening are my fault. You know, I was told that I was kind of labeled a troubled child. I would quite often seek negative attention, because any attention to me was good attention, especially, you know, throughout my teen years when my mum was battling cancer. It was quite severe. So, you know, my entire society around me was all just focused on her and how she's going and is she going to be okay? And, you know, in these incredibly formative years where I really did need a lot more support, especially because I had autism without knowing it, I found that I was just getting in trouble because it would gain some sort of response from the people that I love, my family and my friends, etc.
Feeling pretty lost though throughout that time. Was your dad around?
My father was and is around, not in a massive capacity. He lives in a different town, different state. Our relationship's always been a little bit rocky. It's definitely a lot better in my adult years, but there was a lot of resentment that I felt towards him for the way in which we were brought up.
And the things that you used to struggle with and the trouble you used to get in, on reflection now, how much was your autism and ADHD related to that?
Likely a lot. I mean, a lot of the trouble that I got into was kind of impulsive decisions that I would make where I would perhaps choose the wrong thing to do. And, you know, classic ADHD is impulse control issues. And then there was self-medicating and substance abuse on top of that. It led to, you know, pretty poor foundation for mental health.
How do you see yourself differently now, post-diagnosis and becoming a podcaster and working in this space, working with other parents and all your work in youth justice as well? You're doing a lot of stuff. Objectively, how are you viewing yourself differently now?
I'm incredibly proud of myself now, and it's not something that I ever have really felt before. I've never felt much of a sense of pride. I think the turning point, apart from the diagnosis for me, was when I became a parent. You know, holding my firstborn Hendrix in my arms for the first time, and I was like, wow. You know, up until now, my entire life has just been like a friggin' mess after the other. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
No, you can't. That's all good, bro.
Yeah, I was like, I've been an absolute train wreck, and now I'm in charge of this little thing for the rest of my life, and I want to do everything within my power to make sure she grows up with all of the emotional support and the emotional intelligence, and having both of her parents just being there for her in every sense of the word. And, you know, it's the same for the other two babies that I've got as well. So Hendrix is 4 now, Roman is 3, and Salem is 1 year old. And yeah, but so being a parent is honestly, it changed my life in every single facet and all for the better. So I really credit my current mental health to them. You know, they might drive me crazy and they might want to pull my hair out, but at the end of the day, it's nothing but love, and we truly are this just close, tight little family.
And is it making your children the priority all of a sudden? Of course, is it the fact that that takes some of the pressure off thinking about yourself all the time and everything that is or isn't wrong with you and obsessing over that? And once your focus switches to little children who need you to survive, is that what provides some relief in some way?
I'd say so. I think just in becoming a parent and kind of connecting with this community of parents, I quickly found that there was a lot of things that I needed to adopt in my own life for the betterment of their life and my own. You know, being more kind to myself and not worrying so much, you know, just being like, it'll all be okay. Kids pick up on all of those stresses and, you know, that creates quite an unpleasant upbringing for them. So there was a lot of reconciling my own emotions, a lot of healing my inner child, which, you know, the diagnosis has been a massive part of that. And then implementing all of those changes into, you know, something positive, which is the podcast and my work, things like that. I am also currently studying a diploma in counseling. So wow. my work in youth justice is coming to an end in December, and I'll be stepping into a new role as a counsellor to just further continue being able to help people.
That's amazing, man. It's really impressive how much stuff you're managing to have on your plate and get done at the moment. Is it the case that you've had to rewire that voice in your head to be a positive voice from a negative voice, and in a relatively short time that you've managed to do that? Because that's no small task.
Yeah. It's literally been a lot of looking in the mirror and trying to be kind to myself and giving myself a lot of positive reinforcement and a lot of self-love affirmations and things like that. I've really, really tried hard to push away the negative voices that have definitely been overbearing in my past. Some days are harder than others. You know, I'm not entirely perfect. I wouldn't say that I'm a healed man or anything like that. You know, I still struggle with a lot of self-image issues, but these are things that I am still working on, and I am trying to get a little bit better every day.
And it's not just thinking more positively. Obviously, you have to actually be taking the actions that you know are necessary to be able to incur the results that you want. And then that's sort of very important for self-respect as well, is following through and doing the things that you need to do. And suppose with a lot more responsibility, all of a sudden there was more incentive to do that. Given that you have had the experience that you've had throughout your life pretty much till now, how freaked out were you about bringing kids into the world and whether they were going to have to go through similar things to what you've been through?
I was terrified. Honestly, you know, my wife and I had discussed having kids, and up until I met her, it's not something that was ever on the cards for me. Because in my mind, I was like, there's no way in hell I would want to bring, you know, little people into this world where I would have to be a father. I didn't think that I would have any type of positive father figure inside myself. I just didn't think that it would be good just because of my own upbringing. But my wife was like, well, this is kind of, you know, I've wanted to be a mum since I can remember. So if you don't want children, it's as hard as it is, you know, I love you with all my heart, but like, I need this in my life. I need to be a mum. So a bit of back and forth talking and some really healthy communicating with my wife and myself, I decided let's do it. And we started trying. I expected it to take a lot longer than it did, but I think it was only like 2 months. And then all of a sudden she's pregnant, and it was just like, no turning back now. Yeah, so I really have to like put that in the work.
Happens like that sometimes. So what changed for you in those discussions, going from someone who pretty much thought there's no way I could be a dad, I'm not up to it, seeing how much it meant to your wife, and then getting to a point where you were willing to go down that road? Can you articulate what changed in your mind?
It was definitely the threat of my wife being like, well, this is a deal breaker. If you don't want kids, then we'll have to walk away from each other. Up until then, she's literally the best person that has ever entered my life, and I am just so eternally thankful for being gifted her presence. She is truly an amazing and inspiring person, and she always has my back 100% of the way every day. She's my best friend, and yeah, just everything good in my life I can attribute to her. So I was like, I don't want to lose her, and having a little piece of me and a little piece of her in the world probably wouldn't be so bad.
And so then during the 9 months of the pregnancy, were you able to accept it and get on board, or in your head, were you just freaking out the whole time?
No, I think I knuckled down pretty quickly. Once she told me that she was pregnant, and I wrapped my head around that, the fact that that wasn't a prank or anything like that. And I was like, okay, full steam ahead. I bought some baby books, never read them, but I bought them, which is a lot more than I would have done previously. But I just started really, really trying to, instead of just allowing myself to exist in this haze with when it came to my mental health, because that's what it was. A lot of the time when I was feeling low or feeling like my mental health was a bit negative at the time, I'd kind of just hit autopilot until I could come out of it and be a little bit more happy. I just kind of exist on this monotonous plane. And that's why I existed in, you know, horrible jobs for so many years that I absolutely hated, because I was just autopiloting through life. I was like waiting for the next nice thing to happen to me.
Yeah, but so not fixing your internal world and blaming your unhappiness with the external. So like you said, waiting for things to change rather than driving that change and within you, first of all.
Exactly right, yeah. Yeah, so I really started trying to get in tune with my own emotions and started questioning why it was I was feeling like this instead of just accepting that I am that way and accepting that I just am feeling a bit sad today. And I don't know why, but that's just how it is.
And now that you are a dad, why are you happy that is the case?
I get to wake up every morning or come home from work every morning to my kids, man. That's so cool. You know, the best way I can put it, so I've got a face tattoo and it was a big decision for me, but it's an upside down anchor. And I'll tell you the significance of that symbol because it really kind of draws to your question. So when sailors were coming home from a stint on the ocean on a boat, they would put their anchor upside down at the front of their boat. And that would tell all other ships, like, get out of our way. We're going home to our families. And I really, really found quite quickly that that's just that moment when I leave work or I'm coming home to my family. It's the happiest I ever feel. Like, because I get to go home to these people that love me for me and I love them for them. And it's just this beautiful, pure moment where I'm just so elated and excited. I just can't wait. I can't wait to get home. I can't wait to get home. And, you know, if my kids are still in bed, I'm like, they need to wake up now. I need to see them. I'm like a bloody Labrador. Wake up, wake up, wake up.
I love that, man. I love the symbolism. Why wear that on your face? Just because it's so massive for your life?
Yeah. Yep, 100%. I never thought I'd get a face tattoo. I always promised my mum that I wouldn't, but I think for the message, I get to wear that on my face and look in the mirror and see it every day. And it's just this constant reminder of why my life is the way it is and why I do what I do and why I'm striving to be what I'm going to be.
That's powerful. It's probably one of the best reasons for a face tattoo, I'd say, out of all the ones out there. I reckon it'd be hard-pressed to beat that. That's really cool. And what is it that makes you so passionate about wanting to help kids that are in trouble? We spoke briefly that you've been working in youth justice for quite a while now. I imagine that's a really intense job, sort of in the social services, counseling type space, working, mentoring these kids. How does that work?
So I've been in youth justice for just over 4 years now. I spent a year on day shift on units with the boys. It was really hard. It was really, really hard, especially with undiagnosed autism and, you know, being in this kind of constant state of fight or flight, because it can be quite a dangerous space to work in.
Yeah, full on.
And, you know, always shifting and changing, and you always have to be dynamic and think on your feet. When things go wrong, they can go really, really wrong really, really quickly. So about a year into that job, I found myself in a position where I was responding to two clients that had engaged in a physical altercation, and there were staff already trying to intervene. So when I arrived to the code, I kind of jumped in and grabbed one of the boys to try and calm him down. And he was a boy that I had good rapport with, or at least so I thought, and he turned on me pretty quickly and started assaulting me. So I was very lucky that I wasn't physically harmed, but the mental health took a pretty big dive after that. My wife, like, I think Hendrix was only a couple of months old at that stage. Oh, she would have been a bit over a year old. And she was like, you know, you've got a baby at home. This is too dangerous. Might be time to start finding another job. So I took a little bit of time off to get my head right. And I decided to come back on night shift, a little bit safer for me if the boys were, you know, in their rooms. My priority is my family. That's number one.
What was it about being attacked that rocked you mentally? I mean, no one's going to argue that being assaulted is horrendous. But for you in particular, especially given that you thought you had a reasonable relationship with that person, what was it about it that made it such a rattling experience?
I think it was just this kind of sobering reality that, you know, you're working with a lot of kids that although may need help, you may not be the person that can provide help. You know, a lot of them need to be able to want the help first. And it may only be kind of 1 out of 100 boys that will be receptive to that help or to building that rapport. There's so many barriers. Excuse me. There's so many barriers that you have to face to be able to break through those walls that they've set up. And I don't think I had the fortitude to be able to do that, especially in the capacity that my work had provided me. So I thought, I'll move to night shift. At least then there's kind of this safety net for me physically. And I have contact with the boys through their intercom system. So if they're struggling with their mental health at night, at least I can rest assured that I can buzz them up or they can buzz me up and be like, let's talk. And I found that was really quite helpful in my ability to be able to help them and provide care for them.
How often would that happen that you'd end up having those conversations with them at night?
It hasn't happened very often, but when it has happened, it's been really, really positive for them. You know, I've been able to build great rapport around being able to do that, which is quite unheard of for night shifters. A lot of night shifters just kind of go in, hang out and then go home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I was like actively still trying to do youth work on a night shift. You know, if I was doing my head checks and see that a boy's still awake at 3 a.m. when usually he'd be asleep by 10 p.m., I'd buzz him up and be like, hey, man, you okay? Like, do you want to talk about anything? And sometimes I'd just be told to fuck off and mind my own business. And sometimes they'd want to talk about cars and sometimes they'd want to talk about girls. And sometimes they'd actually, you know, be like, yeah, I'm not doing really well at the moment. You know, I had a friend pass away a few weeks ago and I'm trying to process that and it's really, really hard.
So Carter, why do you care about them? Some might ask.
Someone needs to, man.
Yep.
Someone needs to. If they don't care about themselves, then I want them to know that there's someone on their team. You know, I very, very easily could have ended up in their position. I was very, very fortunate that I didn't get caught in a lot of the things that I did. But I think all too often it's just so easy to put this label on those kids and be like, they're trouble. They're, you know, they're a waste of space. They're oxygen thieves. They're, you know, useless to society and they're never going to amount to anything. But
well, it's easy to think like that. If as a society, it's easy to put people in boxes and pigeonhole them and then just close your mind off and not think about it again and say, oh, the good people are over here and the bad people are over there and just try to make it that black and white because it's easier for us to just move on and ignore things. But it's certainly not how we should be dealing with it.
Correct.
And also when these kids, as you have an intimate understanding of, when they very much get the feeling from the society of, yeah, you're trouble and you're not worth the time or the effort or you're an animal, then what do? Often play up to that even more.
Yeah, they just accept that label and they think, well, if you guys think I'm an animal, then I'm just going to be an animal. You know what I mean?
But they're
kids.
And
a lot of the time, these kids, they're a product of their upbringing. You know, a lot of these kids are coming from, you know, low socioeconomic areas and they've witnessed horrific traumas at a young age and drug abuse at a young age. And, you know, they're kind of growing up a little bit behind the societal standard as far as youth go.
Do you suspect a lot of them have undiagnosed conditions as well?
Yeah, definitely. As well as a lot of diagnosed conditions. It's ever evolving. And it really has been a great space to work in the night shift capacity. I've really, really enjoyed it.
And now you want to get more into counseling.
I also realized that Pardon?
But now you want to get more into counseling outside of that sector.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I've got a job lined up. So I'll kind of dip my toe into the counseling world. But I think the end goal and the dream job is to get a job in a youth sector, like a high school as a
counselor,
mental health counselor. Yeah, yeah. In a high school setting, try to get to them before they get to a point where it's like past the point of no return and they're incarcerated or in even more trouble.
Yeah. And part of that is just because you're obviously a good person by nature, but also you experienced this in a raw way when you were growing up and could have used someone like yourself back then.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the main drive for me, man, is I just want to be the person that little Carter needed.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you are, man. So credit to you for that. That's really cool.
Thank you.
So you've got three little kids. You're working an intense job. You're a married man and you're living with autism and ADHD, which you only recently sort of adjusted to. And you're running your own podcast very well, I might add. That's a lot for anyone to manage. How are you doing?
I think I'm doing okay. You know, as we were saying before, I took a little bit of a break from podcasting. I decided to split the podcast up into seasons just so I could step back and catch my breath because it was getting a little overwhelming. And I had these grand plans to bulk edit like 15 episodes before season 2 started premiering again. But in true ADHD style, I did none of that. So I'm just back to where I was editing, you know, one episode every 2 weeks when I have some time. I've been very lucky in that there is a bit of downtime at my work. Once the boys go to sleep, it's just a lot of kind of ticking boxes and making sure everything's safe. So I'm able to get a lot of my study done during work hours. If that wasn't the case, I would be a lot more stressed out than I am. But yeah, I think it's where my ADHD comes in really handy because I can hyperfixate on these things and they are things that I genuinely enjoy doing. So I don't see them as a chore. I don't see them as work. When I'm doing them, I kind of just go into this zone and I just get it done. So I am thankful for my ADHD in that respect. It's great when I can harness it to my advantage.
Why are you doing these things that are selfless when you've got a lot of your own stuff to manage?
Probably one, as I said, I want to be the person that I needed as a kid growing up. Two, it's probably a great way to deflect a little bit of me having to look in the mirror and just being like, I can put all of my energy into helping others. So maybe I don't have to 110% look at myself and figure out.
But when you're having these conversations,
I think I'm at this level now where I'm.
It's impossible though, I reckon, Cardle, for me anyway, when you're having these conversations, part of being the podcast host and doing the interviews is introspection. Like it just comes with it. I know what you mean, deflecting somewhat, because it's always about the person that you're speaking to and their story. And I love that part of it too, because it does take a bit of the attention off you. But I think that sense of introspection and curiosity for yourself, that has to come with running a show like you're running and having those discussions, because you see the world from someone else's perspective and it makes you think differently about your own life and the people in it.
Yeah, definitely. And the podcast is a great platform in which I've been able to be quite true to myself and honest with myself as well as with my guests. I don't think that the premise of my podcast would work if I held back or anything like that. So I've been able to just be raw and unfiltered and unapologetically myself and tell my story, which has been super helpful in my own healing journey. And it's also provided, you know, all of my guests with just kind of this baseline of like, I feel safe here. I can talk about my stuff without fear of judgment, without fear of ridicule or anything like that. So I think that was a really, really important part of it going into this podcast for me, was to be raw and to be honest and just be myself. And it's paid off.
What's your wife had to say about your development in recent times and making the podcast into a thing and becoming a different man?
Nothing but positive things. And I'm a very emotional person. So anytime my wife pays me a compliment because she's my favorite person in the world, apart from my kids, I just cry everywhere. She goes, "Oh boy, here comes the big feelings again." But you know, she has been my number one supporter since the beginning of it all. I had her on as my guest for the season one finale. Because she has an incredible story that I felt needed to be told as well. So I was honored to be able to record an episode with her.
Yeah, I listened to a bit of that one. Weekend. She's been through a lot in her own life and her own background. It's powerful to find someone you have a connection with who also can understand what it's like to go through some of those same things that you went through that have been so important in, well, shaping you into who you are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she's got an incredible story. You know, she had a lot of mental health issues as a teenager. She even spent some time in a mental health facility twice. She's come out on the other end, you know, a lot better, luckily. You know, both of us had issues with substance abuse. Both of us had issues with self-harm and thoughts of suicide or even attempts in suicide. And it's something that we have discussed and we do discuss on the podcast, but even more so, we both went through a lot of trauma with all three of our births, which is just an entire episode of the podcast in and of itself. But, you know, we've always just had each other's backs from day one, and it's just been an incredibly strong foundation. And we can always come to each other, and we both know that.
What could be better than that? Very lucky to have each other by the sounds of things. You were also the face of a recent national campaign about perinatal anxiety and depression. How did that come about, and why was that important to you?
Yeah, so for the first two births, I had postnatal depression, which I didn't know was a thing in men. And I quite quickly found out that a lot of men didn't think that it could happen to them either. So I found out about an organization called PANDA, which is Perinatal Anxiety and Depression Australia, through one of my guests. She's a community champion for them after her own battles with postnatal depression. So I did a little bit of research about them and looked into them after my talk with Ali, which her episode comes out next week, which I'm very excited for. And I was like, I really like what these guys are about. And I feel like this is a space where there's a lot of men that are existing that don't understand that they have postnatal depression. So I reached out to PANDA and submitted my story and my journey. And then from there, I became a community champion for them. And they came to me and said, we're running, you know, this national campaign for Men's Mental Health Month. And we want you to be the face of it. So that involved a film crew coming to my house and, you know, asking some questions. And from there, all of that footage and my story got sent out Australia wide. And I was published in a lot of like online publications, a lot of print media, and my story was also somewhat told on some national news coverage networks. So Channel 10, I believe, was one of them. And unfortunately, they completely butchered it and they spun a narrative that wasn't correct.
Well,
out of 10 minutes of footage.
We can't have creative control, unfortunately.
Yeah. So out of the 10 minutes of footage that was filmed, they decided to use a 10-second snippet of me being like, I was afraid that I was going to hurt my kid. And they spun it in that kind of negative way.
Yeah.
And it really detracted from the positive message that my story was supposed to be, which sucked. It left a pretty sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was an important lesson that I needed to learn not to trust the media.
Well, that's unfortunate. At least the rest of the campaign sounds like it was successful. And
yeah, it was great. It reached something like 62 million people.
Wow. Awesome. So what was your personal experience of having the perinatal depression?
So it started off as me just kind of reiterating that message that I was going to be a useless father and I wasn't going to do any kind of good to my kids. And I went to a dark place really, really quickly. I mean, it was within the first 6 weeks of the first two births. I found myself just a shell, really, really autopilot, feeling really, really sad all the time, would just cry at the drop of a hat. I was scared to hold my children because I was worried that I would hurt them in some way, which that's the part that they decided to spin negatively. and it was never this like kind of violent feeling or anything like that. I never wanted to hurt them. I never was like, you know, wanted to shake them or anything like that. It was like these little babies are so, so delicate and I am just clumsy and useless. And all of these kind of negative things that I thought about myself would just come to the surface constantly and be like, if you hold your kid, you're probably going to drop them. And, you know, like nothing good is going to come out of you being an active participant in your children's lives. And it made me want to just run away. And I realized really quickly that that wasn't normal. That wasn't something that I actually wanted. It was just all of these fears and anxieties just taking over. And what I now know to most likely be emotional burnout due to autism was probably a massive part of it.
So it became debilitating.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just so sad all the time. I didn't want to leave my room. I didn't want to leave bed. The sounds of my babies crying and me kind of feeling apathetic towards it and just not feeling like I was having an appropriate emotional response to my babies crying just kind of was perpetuating and snowballing this feeling that I had that I was just going to be a failure. It was really, really dark time.
What can men who are having that experience but don't want to feel like a burden do about it? What sort of action were you able to take that others might be able to take?
Well, I was lucky enough to pull myself out with the help of my wife. Once I had that diagnosis and with the help of some therapy, I was able to get myself to a much healthier state. And I was able to... Labels are an important thing for me. Once I'm able to recognize that this is what this is, I'm able to work around it a lot more. It's when it's hazy and when I don't know what it is, that's when it's really detrimental to my mental health.
Yeah, so once it helps to be able to understand it and define it.
Yeah, yeah. So once that's pinpointed, I can work to getting to a better place. PANDA is an absolutely amazing organization. They provide supports for families within the first 12 months of giving birth. Doesn't matter if it's your first or fifth kid, it's always the first 12 months. That's for men and for women. They've just launched not too long ago a text service for dads if they're not the type that wants to talk it out face to face or over the phone. They do have a text messaging service. But the most important thing is lean on your loved ones. You're not a burden. They need you to be your best so that everyone around you can be their best too. You know, everyone's a foundation in a family. Without one foundation, it's going to crumble a little bit. You know, if I'm not at my best, my wife's not going to be able to be at her best because she's going to be picking up slack and she's going to be more stressed out. And then, you know, our kids aren't getting all of the love and attention and everything that they need to be able to develop at the correct rate, you know.
But there's action you can take to remedy that. And you've got to be able to step up and take that action, as you said, so that you can look after yourself and then your wife or your partner can do their best and makes it all go around as it needs to. So some good advice there. So where can we find your podcast and what's it called?
The podcast is called The Touched Out Podcast. It's available on all podcast platforms as well as YouTube. I don't do video versions on YouTube apart from the episode with my wife. I release that as a full video episode. I release every 2 weeks. So next episode will be out next week. Yeah, there's 15 episodes out so far with like a bonus mini episode that I did for Mother's Day to commemorate my mother and her passing and allow myself to be a bit raw and a bit vulnerable and be a bit cathartic and let myself heal in a way that's going to be beneficial for other people that are struggling with grief and loss as well.
Yeah, well, you're doing really well with it. I know how hard it is to have some of those conversations and keep an initiative like that going. So props to you for managing to do that so far. And it seems like you're inspired to keep on doing that. And it takes a whole lot of us having these conversations all over the place to be able to change culture like we're trying to do. So thank you for being one of those people. And I think it's so cool that you're doing all this, given that you have the diagnosis that you have. You're not letting it stop you in any way. And I think that's great for people to be able to see as well, especially people in the autism community, man. So big ups to you and keep it up.
Thank you very much, mate. And yeah, thank you for your space as well. It's all incredibly important. And you know, if enough of us create that ripple, mate, we'll make the wave and we'll make the change.
That's it. Cowabunga.
That's it.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Young Blood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Young Blood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Young Blood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. Thanks to our local business supporters, NBNA Group and Pro Realty Property Consultants. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.